The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
We have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
Well, there's your evidence right there. Straight from the defendant. Your Honor, I'd like to refer you to Exhibit A. We've got the nationally televised confession from defendant Biden. We hear no evidence over and over again, even as the evidence continues to pour in. Welcome back to the show, everyone. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily radio show, and we'll get to a lot of material once again today. Later on, we'll hear again from Joe Biden, the fake president. He introduced his fake national security team yesterday, and then the fake media said that these career politicians weren't political. They're not even political, say the news media. Pretty amazing just to watch all of this happen. I want to begin, though, today focusing in on Georgia. You may have seen some clips on Twitter or elsewhere about this shredding company, this fishy business going on, this company that's evidently got either some ballots or some envelopes that they're shredding. And then, of course, once it got into the news, then the company comes out and makes an official statement and says, look, we don't generally look at anything that we're shredding. We just shred away. But since it looked so suspicious, they came out and said that, well, we have contacted the FBI about what we should do with these documents. So they put the brakes on it because a concerned citizen was out there filming it. Now, if you go back to the Georgia recount, there's Republicans, including the president himself, who are just furious at the way that this was hurriedly done. And it wasn't really an audit, after all. It was just basically recounting everything that they did the first time, the same way. No examination, really, to speak of. Let's go back to the Georgia Secretary of State and what he said when he announced the recount a week or two ago. Clip one.
With the margin being so close, it will require a full by-hand recount in each county. This will help build confidence. It will be an audit, a recount, and a re-canvass all at once. It will be a heavy lift, but we will work with the counties to get this done in time for a state certification.
An audit, what did he say? An audit, a recount, and a re-canvass all at the same time. All at the same time. And all through the process, you saw the tweets from President Trump. You saw the tweets from his team of lawyers saying that it's not being audited. They're not being examined. They're hurrying this through. Well, they get to the end of that quick process, and on Friday, I think it was, they announced that they had certified this election, giving it to Joe Biden. Here was Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger's announcement on Friday, clip 13.
Working as an engineer throughout my life, I live by the motto that numbers don't lie. As Secretary of State, I believe that the numbers that we have presented today are correct.
Well, numbers don't lie, but people sure do. And there's a lot of people lying about a lot of different numbers. Sidney Powell, and again, they had their parting of ways, Sidney Powell and the president's team of attorneys. That was Sunday night. And we're still unsure what all went into that, if it was maybe even some kind of strategy. In any event, the reason I wanted to focus here on Georgia is because she has her suit. She's filing suit today, from what we understand of yesterday that was announced, and then it's going to be filed in Georgia. So I think there is going to be quite a lot of attention on Georgia, or at least there could be the next couple of days. So it's something that we can certainly keep our eyes on. This was what she said on Lou Dobbs, his program, last night, clip three.
And who will be the defendant or defendants?
The defendants are going to be folks in Georgia who are responsible for supposedly making sure the elections in Georgia are done properly. And there are just countless incidents of voter fraud. And yes, well, obviously it couldn't be more urgent. But yes, the time deadlines should be able to be met. And the evidence is so overwhelming, it's almost as though they were so blatant about it, they expected us to catch it.
So that was last night. Earlier, if you go back to Saturday night, she said that the lawsuit she's now about to file in Georgia, that it would be biblical in her words. It would be biblical. In the statement that she released the next day, she said it would be epic. So when you zoom in on Georgia, and even if you just look at the numbers, and I don't know if she even focuses in on this or not, but if you look at Georgia in 2016, when President Trump beat Hillary Clinton, he won Georgia by 211,000 votes. The president secured 2,089,000 votes to Clinton's 1,878,000 votes. So he won by 211,000. That's a pretty comfortable victory just 4 years ago. Now, this year, obviously, from what the media have announced, Georgia flipped. And this time around, Joe Biden won by just 12,670 votes. So he ekes out a victory, just barely, 12,000 votes overall. But what's interesting, maybe that's not the best word, but if you look at the votes that President Trump secured this time around, last time it was 2,089,000. This time, President Trump got 2,461,837 votes. So Donald Trump increased the tally, his tally, by 372,000, almost 373,000 votes over what he got in 2016, when he won easily. So President Trump comes along this time. He ups the count by 373,000, and yet still Joe Biden somehow made up the difference from 2016 plus an additional 373,000 votes. We're told that Biden took in 2,474,507 votes. That means he got almost 600,000 more votes in Georgia than did Hillary Clinton in 2006. Now, that is hard to believe. That is hard to believe. My father wrote in this article, we're trying to give it some more publicity this week with an ad campaign. This is in the forthcoming January edition of the Trumpet magazine. It's already up at the Trumpet website. But he says the mainstream media insist there is no evidence the Democrats tried to steal this election. That is patently false. There's plenty of evidence, but it's also absurd when you think about what the left has been doing for the past several years. You would have to be naive not to think they are committing great frauds with this election. So here the president, as I went through the numbers there with you, he gets all of these additional votes, 373,000 more, just like he upped it in Florida and other states. But just where Joe Biden had to have a lot more votes. Well, it just so happened that he found them in Georgia, in Pennsylvania, in Arizona, in Michigan, and in Wisconsin. And I guess you could throw Nevada in there for good measure as well. But President Trump didn't win. He didn't win Nevada last time. But with these other states, boy, what a miracle. What a miracle. Let's zoom in a little bit further. The Guardian here in the UK, it wrote about 10 counties that tell the 2020 election story. And in particular, they draw attention to Gwinnett County, Georgia, and this unbelievable swing compared to 2016. This is from The Guardian, and I'm assuming you say Gwinnett. I'll just pronounce it that way. Hopefully, if you're in Georgia, you won't be offended if it's the wrong pronunciation. It says Gwinnett County in suburban Atlanta, so it's just outside of Atlanta. It was a key to Biden flipping Georgia. The suburbs were the first area of Georgia to support Republicans as the state moved from solidly Democratic to solidly Republican and are now in the vanguard again as the state has moved back into the Democratic column. Gwinnett voted Republican every year between 1980 and 2012. So Hillary was able to flip it barely in 2016. Before that, for more than 30 years, this had been a Republican county. It says, Gwinnett voted Republican every year between 1980 and 2012, voting for George W. Bush by over 30 points twice. After going narrowly for Clinton in 2016, the county followed the pattern of suburban realignment more strongly than almost anywhere else in the country, voting for Biden by 18 points. So in Gwinnett County alone, Joe Biden won by more than 75,000 votes. It says winning big in places like Gwinnett was the key to Biden's strategy for victory. And he was just able to do it. Oh, yes, he wouldn't have done it without Gwinnett. They've got about 936,000 residents in this county. 581,000 are registered to vote. And Donald Trump, he got 166,000 votes. And Joe Biden got an incredible amount of votes, 241,000. So he won, as I say, by about 75,000 votes. But, you know, you may think, well, that's possible. And if this is the way the trend has been going, but if you just go back over the last few presidential cycles or elections, in 2004, George Bush won the county by 160,000 votes to 81,000. So he nearly doubled John Kerry in 2004. In 2008, John McCain beat Barack Obama in this county. He got 158,000 votes. Obama got 129,000. And then you go up closer to today. Romney in 2012, he got 160,000 votes, and Obama got 132,000 votes. So the Democrat, all the way up until Clinton, finally in 2016, she got 166,000 votes, and Donald Trump got 146. Then this year, President Trump ups his tally by 20,000 votes to catch up with Hillary Clinton from back in 2016. But Biden, he made the jump from 166,000 for Clinton in 2016 to 241,000. I mean, this is a massive leap for someone that had no campaign whatsoever. Nobody turned out for his rallies. He rarely went to rallies. And yet we're led to believe there is no evidence. I'm just giving you some of the raw statistics to say nothing of the cases of shredding or ballots that weren't filled out the right way or ballots that just showed up in the middle of the night like they did in Philadelphia and Detroit and Milwaukee. This is from, and the Secretary of State, he's come out, he's a Republican. And so the Democrats, I mean, they have the perfect cover here. the perfect cover, because they can say, look, you've got a Republican governor, you've got a Republican secretary of state. There's nothing to worry about here. This is from, and then we've got all this new equipment, brand new, and it's worked flawlessly. Oh, yes, it's the most secure election in history. Georgia had more new equipment coming from Dominion than any state in the union. This was a story from before the election. You go back to October 23rd, so this is about 10 to 12 days before the presidential election. And this is the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. This is a liberal newspaper in Georgia, right in the state of Georgia. And it says here, in a high-stakes election, Georgia's voting system vulnerable to cyber attack. That's the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The article says, headed into one of the most consequential elections in the state's history, Georgia's new electronic voting system is vulnerable to cyber attacks that could undermine public confidence, create chaos at the polls, or even manipulate the results on election day. Now, the Secretary of State's office was not happy with this article. In fact, they wouldn't even answer questions coming from the Journal Constitution. You read through the story and get to the end of it, and the journal says, yeah, we contacted the Secretary of State's office, and he wouldn't participate in the interview with us or this investigation with us. The article says this, computer scientists, voting rights activists, U.S. intelligence agencies, and a federal judge have repeatedly warned of security deficiencies in Georgia's system and in electronic voting in general. But state officials, that would be Governor Kemp, that would be the Secretary of State, state officials have dismissed their concerns as merely opining on potential risks. Nothing to worry about here, they said before the election. Nothing to worry about here, they said after the election. Nothing to worry about here, they said during the recount. Nothing to worry about here, they said on Friday when they certified the state. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get it certified. Move on. Get rid of some of the ballots if you have to. Get rid of the envelopes if you have to. This was in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution just before the November 3rd election. It says, instead, an investigation by the AJC shows Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger's office weakened the system's defenses, disabling password protections on a key component that controls who is allowed to vote. This was before the election, when they started in on early voting. I think that was October 12th. They weakened the security on this system. And you know why? Because it was so disastrous in June when they had the primary vote. It was just the worst day ever. I'll read a quote from an article from the Atlanta Constitution earlier, from back in June. So they thought, well, let's go in, let's even remove more of the restrictions and just try to make it easier, move people on through, and never mind the fact that we're exposing ourselves to fraud, to hacking. And that's exactly what happened. It says, days before early voting began on October 12th, Raffensperger's office pushed out new software to each of the state's 30,000 voting machines through hundreds of thumb drives that experts say are prone to infection with malware. It says, and what state officials describe as a feature of the new system actually masks a vulnerability. So they give out all this new equipment. They rushed this through back in 2019. Just a year ago, when Governor Kemp and Secretary Raffensperger said, hey, let's get these new Dominion systems, it was a $107 million deal. I think this article says $104 million. So over $100 million to hurry and get this equipment put in place. And this all happens just before the pandemic. And then all through the pandemic, well, if you go back to the disaster in June, you had all these people at the polling stations that didn't even know how the equipment worked. I mean, leave aside fraud and theft and stealing. You go back to the June primary, and it was just it was a disaster because of the incompetence. People hadn't even been trained to run this equipment. So they got new they added new software just before voting opened for the presidential election. It says, and what state officials, well, I read that. It says, officials tell voters to verify, well, it gives an example of how this can easily be manipulated. And it says further on, such a manipulation could not be detected without an audit after the election. So this is why they didn't want a full-scale audit. They didn't want to examine the process. They just wanted to hurry through the count again. To count everything just the same way they did the first time. It says further on, the new voting system presents serious security vulnerability and operational issues caused by fundamental deficits and exposure, says this U.S. District Judge, Amy Tottenberg. These risks, this is a judge, a U.S. attorney, or judge rather, these risks are neither hypothetical nor remote under the current circumstances. It says state officials zealously defend the new system, however. That's Raffensperger's department. The Secretary of State, who oversees Georgia elections, hired a consultant to assess the system security, but officials refuse to release the consultant's report, saying it contains sensitive information. You can't make this up. You can't make this up. Basically, here's a Republican Secretary of State saying there's nothing to worry about here. It's the same spirit as the DHS statement. The most secure election in history. And then you have all of this criticism, all of these people sounding the alarm before the election. And the Secretary of State says, no, don't worry about it. We've hired a consultant to come in and analyze all of our equipment. Oh, yeah? What do they say? Well, that's confidential. We can't really get into that because it's sensitive information. Okay. So they've got all of this new equipment. The article explains how that they rushed through this process in 2019. It explains how that it was $104 million. It talks about how the state of Texas, they were given the same pitch from Dominion. They looked at the equipment. They looked at the software. And Texas said, no way, this is vulnerable. This would be too vulnerable to an attack. That's the state of Texas. Texas said, no way, we're not getting this equipment. Georgia was all in. So as I say, it'll be interesting to see what's in Sidney Powell's court briefing to be filed today if she carries out her plan. The article here says, U.S. intelligence agencies have warned that electronic voting systems are likely targets of foreign governments trying to disrupt elections. And you see the radical left, they were on that very subject for 4 years following Donald Trump's surprising victory in 2016. Now, though, as I've been saying, it's the most secure election in history. Listen to the Georgia Secretary of State and how serious this sounds, you know, looking into every possible instance of illegal voting. This is, again, from a couple weeks ago, clip two.
My office will continue to investigate each and every instance of illegal voting. Double voting, felon voting, people voting out of state. If you report it, we will investigate it. Every legal vote will count. We will continue to follow and enforce the law.
If you report it, we will investigate it. And they have hurried all the way through, and they have been covering their tracks all the way through. Newt Gingrich brings this out in a column he did for Epoch Times just today. It was so widespread, the fraud, and so sloppy, that they're scurrying around now trying to cover their tracks. We'll see how well they did with that once more of these briefs are filed. The article from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution says most Georgians got their first look at the new voting system on June 9th during primary elections that had been delayed twice because of the coronavirus. It did not go well. And then it just talks about all of the problems they had with this new system just 5 months ago. 5 months ago, 5 days after the primary, the Secretary of State's office devised a solution to speed up voting. It would disable password protections for the poll books, which verify voters' identity and eligibility. So to speed things up, because it went so bad on June 9th, to speed things up, they didn't work to make it more secure. They removed those safety valves. They removed them. It quotes someone later in the article, "Poll books are the gospel of who gets to vote," said Duncan Buell, a computer science professor. "Access to a single electronic poll book could enable hackers to invade the state's voter registration database. From there," Buell said, "they could disenfranchise people in areas with certain demographics and voting patterns. Some voters could be deleted from the rolls, making it appear they had never registered. Some could be surreptitiously assigned to a voting location other than their correct precinct. Others could be listed as having cast an absentee ballot or voted early." And on it goes, some of these very things. And this is an article 2 weeks before the election. And these are some of the very things that have been discovered in these investigations. It says, in a report last year, the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee listed poll books among the vulnerable components of the U.S. election infrastructure. It's like I've been saying this week. I mean, this is something that for the last 20 years, certainly the last 15 to 16 years, you've had people on both sides of the aisles sounding the alarm about this equipment. In the case of Smartmatic, equipment that was created in Venezuela. And now it's worked its way into the United States of America. And on a grand scale, together with the Dominion outfit and so on. And where are the Dominion and Smartmatic executives coming forward defending their products? They've gone missing. Where is Dominion? Where is Dominion? It says, when Georgia eliminated the password requirement, it created a vulnerable, high-risk, high-reward target for an adversary of any skill level who either seeks publicity or is deliberately disenfranchising targeted voters. That's in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution from October 23rd, a week and a half before the election. Georgia, the liberal left-leaning newspaper in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, warning about what would happen. Turned out to be a pretty prescient analysis or investigation. This other article, and I don't think I have time to go through much of it, but this is the one from the same newspaper that came out on June 13th, so 5 months before the election, and it talked about all of the problems with that primary. It says halfway through the article, "The day was a big, big fail that election officials should have anticipated," said Marilyn Marks, the executive director of the Coalition for Good Government. Well, before this lady's comment, it goes through all of the problems they had on that day. If I can find it here. It says, instead, many of the same problems emerged Tuesday, turning Election Day in Georgia into a familiar fiasco. An examination by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution found human error, equipment failure, and a complicated multi-computer voting system combined to create chaos that left some voters waiting as long as 8 hours to cast ballots. And then it talks about the precinct workers and how they lack the training and so on. Let me skip ahead to, again, what Secretary of State Raffensperger said. Georgia's chief elections officer, Secretary of State Raffensperger, took no responsibility for Tuesday's debacle. This is the debacle in June. And Raffensperger's response, just like it's been this time around, hey, we did everything just right. Or if there were some problems, it was because of those working at the local level. It says, Raffensperger, a Republican who had never overseen a statewide election before Tuesday. Well, and then it goes on. He's never overseen one of these. He's got all of this new equipment. And he brings in some kind of consulting firm to look at things. And then we can't even know what was concluded. Because it's covered in secrecy. It says, in a report on what went wrong, Raffensperger's office said the new system fundamentally changes the way that the state of Georgia has conducted voting for nearly two decades. So here you've got this fundamental transformation. You've got all of this new equipment. You've got all of these debacles. And then we get to the presidential election. Okay, it's a close race, so we'll hurry through a recount. We got that certified. Everything's done. Don't ask questions. That's where we are today. This article talks about some of the history that Atlanta has had in particular with running an election the right way. It talks about the expected number of voters for the presidential election, how it was going to probably overwhelm the system because, well, there'd be a lot more voting on November 3rd than there were, you know, June 9th. And, of course, that turned out to be true as well. So today is the day that Sidney Powell files her brief somewhere in Georgia, and we'll find out who the defendants are, I suppose, later today. Here's what she said Saturday night in that Newsmax interview that turned out to be quite controversial. Clip 11.
Let me ask you about the state of Georgia. Obviously, yesterday, you know, the governor there, he certified the election for Joe Biden. It's about 12,000 votes. And what you see, will Georgia switch?
Yeah, that's a total farce. Georgia's probably going to be the first state I'm going to blow up. And Mr. Kemp and the Secretary of State need to go with it because they're in on the Dominion scam with their last-minute purchase or award of a contract to Dominion of $100 million.
Now, there's quite a few Republicans that didn't like that statement there, putting Kemp and Raffensperger in on this and implying that that there's some wrongdoing of some sort. But keep in mind, and this is why we're keeping our eyes on this, as my father said in that January article, or the one that's now out in the January edition, he said, I'm certain that we're about to see some of the biggest frauds exposed, perhaps ever. Now, stepping back away from Georgia for a moment, this column by Newt Gingrich today at the Epoch Times, he says here that laziness leads to sloppiness, and sloppiness is how the most brazen heist in American history is being exposed. He uses the word exposed. He's not the only one. Of course, my father was talking about this as soon as the media coronated Joe Biden. Well, this is going to flip, and you're going to see a lot of corruption exposed in the process. Gingrich says, stealing the 2020 election was a mammoth undertaking involving widespread lawlessness and illicit partnerships between private actors and public officials. They've been working to cover their tracks since Election Day, but they didn't work fast enough. They've been trying to cover the tracks, but they haven't worked fast enough. He said now the courts need to stop them from destroying any more evidence so that the people of Pennsylvania and the rest of the country can accurately assess the ramifications of their wrongdoing. The courts need to intervene. The courts need to stop this madness. The courts need to stop the corruption. As my father says in that article, they've been getting away with this kind of thing for so long and not punished. None of them get punished for their wrongdoing. None of them get punished for cheating. And so they keep right on with their lawlessness. Some of these actors have been guilty of treason, And yet they just continue. They're not punished. They get jobs on CNN instead. That's what happens when these kinds of crimes go unpunished. If you repeatedly let the criminals get away with it, well, what's going to happen? You're going to descend into anarchy. Everyone just doing what seems right in their own eyes. Let me find that clip from, I think it's Delling Poll, Sam, number 7. This is a UK journalist talking about this election and just how shameful it is to see so many of President Trump's closest supporters abandoning him in this time of need. Clip 7.
This has been stolen from Donald Trump. And I say, finally, shame on all those alleged conservatives. And I'm calling you out because you're not really conservatives. You're demanding that Trump surrenders gracefully an election which has been stolen from him. Shame on you, because you are going to, if Biden does get in, you are going to rue the day. It's going to empower censorious big tech. It's going to be out of control. And Trump was your last chance of reining it in. I think the world is going to be an uglier, darker, less free place if Trump gets cheated in this election. And I hope he fights to the bitter end, because he's doing it for all of us.
I hope he fights on to the bitter end. And as he does this, it's just going to be him and his close advisors and his attorneys. As one conservative after another says, you know what? Hey, like I said yesterday, hey, it's been 16 days. It's been 2 weeks. We got to move on. We got to move on. We got to accept that Joe Biden is the president. And then hopefully we can come back in 2024. That they would think this way after this kind of fraud. That they would think they'd even have a chance in 4 years. Gingrich says this in his piece, an unprecedented number of mail-in and absentee ballots were cast this year, and practically everyone expected that this would result in a higher than usual rate of ballots being rejected for various flaws, such as lacking a secrecy envelope or missing information. In Pennsylvania, tens or hundreds of thousands of ballots were likely to be rejected based on historical patterns. So just comparing it to previous years, like I did with some of the vote tallies in Georgia. It says, instead, a mere 0.03% of mail-in ballots were ultimately rejected, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 1,000 votes. So just looking at historical precedent, because there were so many more mail-in ballots, Gingrich is saying there should have been tens of thousands of them disqualified because they didn't have the right information or because they didn't have this envelope or whatever it was. You've got to do it the right way. And some states are incredibly strict with it, as well they should be, because of how dangerous it is to enter that realm of voting or democracies, elections. That's why so many states in Europe ban the process, because they know wherever you find mail-in voting, you're going to find a lot of fraud. It says, considering that a significant majority of mail-in votes were cast for Biden, the Democrat candidate benefited handsomely from this discrepancy. But how did this anomaly happen? It turns out that election officials in Democrat strongholds such as Allegheny County, Philadelphia County, and Philadelphia's collar counties, particularly Delaware County, exceeded their authority in order to give voters preferential treatment that was not afforded to voters in Republican-leaning areas of the state. They sent out their operatives. They got a hold of some of these voters and told them that they could cure it. And this wasn't allowed in other counties. And so that's in the courts right now, or it's being appealed. That's just one of several examples that Gingrich brings out. But before these examples, as I read to you already, he says they got lazy, they got sloppy. They were surprised, of course, because Donald Trump was winning by such a large margin. And so then they pulled the plug on the counting, and we all saw it happen on election night. And then when they plugged everything back in, wouldn't you know it, Biden made up all the ground, and then some. He was right out in front. Gingrich said they've been working to cover their tracks since Election Day, but they didn't work fast enough. And now more than ever, you would think that conservatives from all over would be rising in defense of President Trump, insisting that this be made right, insisting that the courts stop them in their tracks. This lawlessness that just gets worse and worse and worse. Laura Ingraham last night, this was, I guess, maybe two nights ago, so this would have been Monday night, but here she is. She's one of the top conservatives in prime time on Fox News, and she's throwing in the towel, clip five.
But unless the legal situation changes in a dramatic and, frankly, an unlikely manner, Joe Biden will be inaugurated on January 20th. To say this constitutes living in reality.
That was Monday night. Then the very next night, you've got Tucker, who comes on an hour or two before her. Here's Tucker Carlson last night, clip six.
The first time in a decade, Democrats are set to control the House of Representatives and the executive branch.
For the first time in a decade, they've got the House of Representatives and the executive branch. And of course, you know what Tucker had to say last week about Sidney Powell. Well, she's got no evidence. She's got no evidence. My father says, this is from his recent article, he says that the nation, the United States, we could add to that, the world, is about to be shocked. I believe you're going to see frauds exposed like you've never even imagined. That's in his latest article, Why Donald Trump Will Remain America's President. And judging by this next clip by Sidney Powell, it was Sam, I think it was, this morning, who said it sounds like she's maybe read that article at thetrumpet.com. Here's clip four.
Do you think that we're going to see the Trump presidency saved?
Yes, I definitely do.
Yes, I definitely do. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
We're strong enough to say, I love you. I love you. And we're acting out of love. That's what New York Tough means. And we have a special mask for Thanksgiving because, you know, we're also creative in New York. We are creative and we do things a little different. And we have a special mask. Don't be a turkey this Thanksgiving. Wear a mask. Don't be a turkey.
That is the Emmy Award-winning governor from New York, Andrew Cuomo, revealing the latest, greatest face mask in the state of New York, specially made for this Thanksgiving. Nothing like some Thanksgiving commentary from our elected leaders to get us ready for spending Thanksgiving alone with our mashed potatoes, as you heard on yesterday's show. I talked yesterday to the students about the first Thanksgiving with the pilgrims back in 1621. And I wish I would have seen this article that's going to be posted at thetrumpet.com later today by Andrew Miller. He gave some important details of that landing at Plymouth Rock, 102 pilgrims. It was right in the middle of the winter. We're coming up, as I told the students, we're coming up on the 400-year anniversary of the Mayflower's landing on that Massachusetts shore. That was back in 1620, December, I believe, December of 1620. 102 pilgrims, they arrived in the dead of winter. It was a brutally cold winter, and dozens of them starved to death through the winter. 102 arrived, and barely half of them survived that first winter. And then, as Andrew points out in his article, generally the story is told that they got busy once the weather turned warmer, planted some crops, they had a bountiful harvest, and then they wanted to celebrate with 3 days of Thanksgiving. And Andrew says that's not exactly the way that it happened. It took them a few years to sort things out. They needed some help from the Native Americans initially just to have a Thanksgiving celebration. But he explains in this article, and as I say, I got a few of the details wrong yesterday in my forum, so I'll have to come back at a forum next week to set the record straight. But if you have the time today or tomorrow, make sure that you read The Hidden Lesson of the First Thanksgiving. That's at thetrumpet.com website. But in it, Andrew talks about how that those pilgrims that came over seeking, you know, religious freedom in the New World, that they had sort of a communal lifestyle. It was more of a socialist arrangement. And once they had all of these devastating, you know, deaths from disease, people starving to death, I think there were only like four women left. So there were lots of men without spouses and women that were on their own. And of course, everybody's supposed to pitch in and everybody benefits. But as Andrew brings out, everybody was, you know, complaining and pretty selfish until about 2 years into their stay. They finally, William Bradford led the way in saying, okay, we're going to have to change things a bit. Everybody's going to be given their own plot of land and you're going to have to produce. If you individually want to survive, if you and your family want to thrive, then you're going to have to work hard and produce on your own land. So basically, as Andrew explains, they shifted from, you know, more of a socialist philosophy to one that maybe more Americans today would be familiar with, although we do see a lot of that beginning to change. This is from the article. The pilgrims produced so much food during the summer of 1623. So this, again, it was a couple years on. Well, let me just back up and see if I can give you some context. It did not take Governor Bradford long to realize that something was seriously wrong in his History of Plymouth Plantation. He wrote that the young men resented having to work. Well, he just talks about all of the discontent and what Bradford did to change things. It says, after 3 years of scarcity, Governor Bradford rectified the situation by abolishing communalism After discussing the matter with the leaders of the community, Bradford assigned every family a parcel of land and arranged for all the young boys to be assigned as members of some particular family. He then told each household that they could keep whatever they produced or trade it away as they saw fit. The change was startling. And then they started to really produce. And then the Thanksgiving they had in 1623, I mean, then it was truly abundant. Further on here, it says, in other words, Bradford and other pilgrim leaders had to repent of espousing the socialist ideas of the ancient Greek philosopher Plato above the laws of God. Plato rejected the concept of family and private property in his book Republic, but God considers the family unit as the basic building block of the economy. It says the Apostle Paul wrote that if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So these were biblical concepts that they moved toward in early America, or what would become America. Andrew says, finally, the pilgrims had to learn the hard way that a godly economy is built on a foundation of strong families that produce enough to take care of themselves and give to others. After they learned this important lesson, they were undoubtedly more thankful during the third Thanksgiving than they were during the first one. This is because they learned to be thankful for more than the food the Native Americans gave them. They learned to be thankful for the law of God that taught them how to build a prosperous society. He goes on to talk about that. Well, he quotes from Paul Johnson. It's the same one that you find in No Freedom Without Law, and how that this American experiment, the way that it started off, it was to really build a society, to build a civilization, to build a nation on the foundation of God's law, on a biblical foundation. When you're doing it that way, it really does make this day of Thanksgiving something that people appreciate and that people love and that people use to actually give thanks to God for these perfect laws of His and for all of the blessings He bestows upon us when we put these laws into action in our lives. Think about Deuteronomy 28 or the things that Herbert Armstrong taught us over the years, the law of cause and effect. We reap what we sow. The early pilgrims, they learned this. They learned this valuable lesson, and they were thankful to their God for it. I'll conclude here with a few emails that have come in over the last few days. It says, thanks to all the TD staff who work so diligently to present the true picture of what's going on in the world. Time is so critical, and the little peanut shell is riding the tide. We're always looking forward to the program. Have a great week. Another one here comes from North Carolina. And this says, I have learned a lot from Mr. Gerald Fleury and the Trumpet Daily over the years. What a life-changing education. I believe President Lincoln, in his prayer room, covenanted with God, and the fruit shows God heard and covenanted with him. The North won at the Battle of Gettysburg. That was the turning point in the war. And the president kept his word with God and promoted him in America. It says, Thursday, America will once again keep Thanksgiving, which promotes God to the whole nation over 150 years later. What a solemn, wonderful history. It's our history. Happy Thanksgiving. This one here comes from Texas. It says, just a quick note to say thanks to you and your team for the great programs since the night of the election. As you mentioned, even news outlets such as Fox News have now caved in to what was once fair and balanced to that of an anti-Trump agenda. So it has been more difficult to search for the real news as of late. This makes the programs more interesting as you've been able to dig up details that almost every other news outlet avoids, such as Dominion, for example. I realize it takes a lot more time to research and prove the truth and present the facts, so thank you again for the extra effort in exposing Satan and making visible what God is doing each day. A couple more here. It says, excellent coverage. Excellent. You're doing investigations that no one else is doing. I'm so glad I found your channel, your YouTube channel. No one is safe, so please stay protected. Many blessings to you and your families. Another one here says, your message is 100% accurate. The trumpet's prophecies have always been correct during these 25 years I've been following. And then another one here laments, what good is there in exposing this corruption when nothing is done about it? Biden said himself that they were putting together the greatest fraud, the greatest voter fraud in the history of this nation. And then another one here, on a positive note, says, look at that, someone willing to lift the hood and to expose the truth. Well, that's all we have time for on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.